Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello there and a very warm welcome. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments, Bavaria welcomes Pope Benedict home. An abbot shares the southern German region's legacy of Christian joy. And our Latin lover tells of eagles lost in Germany's mists of time. Well, thanks for joining me. I'd like to step back in time, perhaps not to the mists of time, but to the 24th of April 2005, on the occasion of the inauguration mass in St. Peter's Square of Pope Benedict XVI's pontificate. "Those who believe are never alone," said the newly elected Pope in that first homily of what will go down in history as the first homily of his pontificate, highlighting thus our belonging to a community of faithful through baptism, our communion with God in life and death, and also our communion with the saints. The reason I mention this particular sentence is that just over a year later, he chooses these same words to mark his homecoming to Bavaria, where from Saturday 9th of September to the 14th, he visits places familiar to him, those where he was born, grew up, studied for the priesthood, taught, and was later consecrated bishop. Places like Munich, Altötting and Regensburg. My colleague Chris Altieri is currently with the Pope in Munich and reports on this trip for us.
Flags waved and Bavarians young and old cheered Pope Benedict. A military band played the Vatican anthem for the Holy Father after his plane touched down at Franz Josef Strauss International Airport in Munich Saturday afternoon. The German heads of state and government were there to greet the Holy Father along with Bavaria's President Edmund Stoiber. The Cardinal Archbishop of Munich and Freising, Friedrich Vetter, was there to receive Pope Benedict along with the head of the German Bishops' Conference, Cardinal Karl Lehmann, and the bishops of Bavaria. After brief words of greeting from German President Horst Köhler,
"Heiliger Vater, willkommen in der Heimat, willkommen in Deutschland."
Pope Benedict addressed the dignitaries and the gathered faithful.
"Sehr geehrter Herr Bundespräsident, verehrte Frau Bundeskanzlerin."
The Holy Father said he recalls people and events that touched him deeply and marked him permanently.
"Erinnerungen an Menschen und Ereignisse, die tiefe Spuren."
Fully aware of all that he received during his years in Bavaria, Pope Benedict said he has come first and foremost to thank all those who contributed to his personal formation. Pope Benedict also said he has come as the successor to Peter, to confirm and reaffirm the profound connection, the strong ties that exist between the See of Rome and the Church in what he called his homeland, Bavaria. There to greet Pope Benedict at the airport were representatives from every phase of his life in Bavaria, including faithful from the parish where the man born Josef Ratzinger received baptism the very day he was born, April 16th, Holy Saturday, 1927. Children who have recently made First Communion in the church where Pope Benedict received the Eucharist for the first time himself were also present, as well as students from the minor seminary where Pope Benedict received his early instruction. Today, the man who once was known to the world as Josef Ratzinger is the spiritual father to Bavarians who, in simple and beautiful ways, are everywhere expressing their joy at Pope Benedict's homecoming. Across the main avenue of Munich and above the thoroughfares that lead to the towns Pope Benedict will visit are banners bearing the German words that say, quite simply, "Holy Father, welcome home." Seminarians from the Diocese of Munich and Freising shared their feelings with me. For you as a seminarian of the Archdiocese, what does this represent?
This is very important because we are not so many and we need to be strengthened in our vocation, in our faith, above all in our hope and love of to Christ and to the people. And so we need the Pope to tell us you are on the right way.
How do you feel that the Pope is coming back, coming home?
I'm happy. I'm happy to hear his speeches very near to people of these days. This is something essential for me, for the priesthood too.
the people of Bavaria have understood that Pope Benedict is coming back to show the world where he learned that those who believe are truly never alone. The youth of Bavaria are enthusiastic about the Holy Father's visit as well. Many, like this young pilgrim couple, are keenly aware of the importance of the Pope's homecoming.
I'm Orthodox, but he's Catholic. Just a once-life experience, and you have to be there if you believe in God.
Pope is coming back to Aldeating when I'm alive. Yeah, it's great. It's a good feeling.
From Munich, I'm Chris Altieri.
The journey which Chris is reporting on is also being closely followed by a fellow Bavarian and personal acquaintance of Pope Benedict's, the Abbot Primate of the Benedictine Confederation, Notker Wolf. I asked him to grant us some deeper insight into this homecoming from another Bavarian's perspective. I have to tell you, it was a sweltering summer day when I met him in the cool of his monastery, that of St. Anselmo, atop the Aventine Hill. Minutes later, I heard padded sounding footsteps. I looked up and caught sight of the abbot in his regular black Benedictine cassock, bringing with him, as always, an aura of quiet gentleness. In true Benedictine tradition, he made me feel more than welcome, sharing with me snippets of an abbot's life, such as recent trips to exotic places like China and North Korea, all the while peppering the conversation with inspiring remarks about love, about God. But I had to go about my business. So, conforming to his mood as gently as I could, I steered him away from the Orient to another part of the world, his very own, and indeed his fellow countrymen's, Pope Benedict's Bavaria, where it seems the word joy, Christian joy, shapes people's lives. Pope Benedict clearly is attached to his roots. When he went to Poland recently, he went to the late Pope John Paul II's hometown, and he quoted from Goethe, yes, saying that to understand a man, you have to go to his hometown. Yes. He himself is going to his hometown. As a fellow Bavarian, how do you read into this?
I think Bavarians are really attached to their home country and to their roots. It's the same for myself. I grew up in the countryside, in the western part of Bavaria. And I must say, if I wouldn't have grown up in that part, I couldn't do my job nowadays.
Why is that?
I would say it has given me a feeling for people with whom I lived, and now also to understand people. And I was completely socialized in the religious social community of my hometown. So I grew up, religion was nothing strange to me, it belonged to everyday life. And this is surely the same for the Holy Father. He grew up also in the countryside, and he grew up near Altötting. It's one of the biggest pilgrimage places of Our Lady in the whole of Europe. So this has given you, for your whole life, a basic formation. Like forming coins, would say you are shaped for your whole lifetime. And the first years you are growing up, we all know that they are so important. The Pope has always kept close relations, not only to his hometown, but to the whole of Bavaria, especially to his students of Regensburg when he was professor there. And, by the way, he did his private retreats every year in a Benedictine monastery. And Bavaria is a Benedictine country.
The Benedictine formation was important in particular in terms of his love of liturgy, no? Would you say that?
Yes, because the center of our Benedictine life is liturgy, the service to God, and it's not only that. I think it's also the way of the Benedictine discretion, not to fall into extremes, but to respect the human person in his individuality or her individuality. Saint Benedict has given us a form of a relaxed living together. He has given us the rule, and I would say this kind of discretion, of not overdoing things, not stressing too much, but respecting also human frailties. It's the character of the whole of Bavaria, I would say. Because if you look back to Bavarian history, it was formed by many Benedictine monasteries. If you look at the map of the 9th century, Bavaria was full of monasteries, bigger ones and smaller ones. And even at the time of the secularization in 1802 or 03, when when practically all of the Benedictine monasteries were cancelled, the whole social system broke down and the educational system broke down, because the Benedictines had the schools and many employees in their monasteries, so that the Bavarian king, after a while, when he had closed down the monasteries, he told his minister of culture, "I think we have slaughtered the wrong pig." And he himself established again Benedictine monasteries. And up to now, the Bavarian Benedictine monasteries, there are about 17, I think. Most of them are running schools, and a number of people in public services have grown up in Benedictine schools. So they are most influential on our social life and indirectly also the political life.
So would you say Bavaria the Catholic as opposed to the rest of Germany?
The northern part of Bavaria around Nuremberg is very Protestant. But that doesn't mean that they are less Christian as the Catholics are. I would say Bavarian is a Christian country, at least still it is.
A very striking trait of Pope Benedict during the first part of his pontificate was to talk about joy all the time. He tends to drum in on the very positive aspects of the faith. He doesn't want the widespread opinion that the Catholic faith is about prohibitions. Do you think it comes from this very solid country sort of background of his?
I would say so, because in Bavaria, we have unfolded in the Baroque times the beautiful, we have built the beautiful churches, or I have to take into consideration also Austria, because it's more or less the same culture. It's a culture of joy. You see it in art, in these beautiful churches of Baroque and Rococo. It's much more, much finer, and I would say much more joyful than the Italian Baroque, for example. Although the Baroque has come from Italy. And if you think of Mozart, Schubert, and these composers with their beautiful masses. The whole music, it's a way really of joy, and therefore if you look to Bavaria also nowadays, there are so many brass bands, folk music. Bavaria somehow is a singing country, and music is a language of your heart, and where you express, of course, not only joy, but also your sorrows and everything. But at least you let it out. And in this regard, I think Benedict XVI is very much formed also by this kind of culture of mentality. Whereas in Germany, usually we have the impression that the church is an institution. And as soon as you think of an institution, there are prohibitions and laws you have to fulfill and so on. So this gives a rather dark impression also of the church. The church is an institution like a party or a club or something, and where you have to follow rules and things. But it's not, first of all, the I would say, the place of hope, of joy, of praying and singing together, of experiencing the ecclesiastical communion. And I see in his pontificate that he stresses very much that our God is not a bookkeeper to look after your sins, but first of all, a merciful, loving God.
The God with the human face, as he said recently in an interview. Which are the places of major importance, do you think, in this journey?
Of course, he is going to Munich. He was Archbishop of Munich for some time at least. In the center of Munich, you find a column of Our Lady, and she's called Patrona Bavaria, the patron of Bavaria. The Bavarian kings have dedicated Bavaria to Our Lady. And this shapes still the whole popular religiosity of the people, and they feel under the umbrella or the cape, or how do you say, the mantle of our Lady, they feel protected and they feel well. So he starts there from the column, and he also had left there, so he goes also back to his roots in this regard. The other place, of course, then is Altötting.
Which is also a Marian shrine, no?
It's a Marian shrine. I think it's the sixth biggest one in Europe. I myself, for example, started with a group of legionaries of Mary. When I was a student, we started a pilgrimage by foot from Munich to Altötting. It was a pilgrimage of 3 days of singing together, praying together. It's a special experience. And so there are many people coming to this shrine in their sorrows, and they are carrying around the shrine the cross. And of course, it's very popular, but it's also deep in their heart. So he goes there. It's also part of his roots, I would say. And then he goes to Regensburg, where he has worked as a professor. And he's in best memories there. Whenever he came back, also as prefect of the Congregation of Faith, he went to Regensburg and to meet with his former students.
Apart from his stature as a professor, as a very personal pope that the people at large are interested in, it's the, you know, the man who has a brother, who has a house, who was born somewhere.
Yeah, and he shows very much now the pastoral side of his new office, I would say, of his new task or his new service. And he speaks about God in a very beautiful way, and he tries to tell people that God is a loving God who wants to save this world. Nevertheless, he sticks to the basic Catholic truth, I would say, like the truth about family. He doesn't neglect the truth by no means, and he doesn't relativize it.
His motto when he became a bishop, I think, was co-workers of the truth. It seems to mark the connection between his previous task as a teacher and his new mission.
Yeah, in his all his homilies and speeches, he gives a new color, I would call it. It's the color of a human face. And he himself also is not the big showman, because it's not his charisma, I would say. But he remains behind his office, and in this regard, he appears very humble. And I think that's one of the things why people like him so much.
There's a sort of shyness about him, isn't there?
Yes, it's kind of shyness, and he has now to appear in public, although he would most probably prefer to sit in a room and study. But he has taken the job, and he is accomplishing his duties, and also to be present among people. Of course, you will never turn him to a showmaster. I don't like to call his predecessor a showmaster, but he came from the theater, so he was easy in handling all these things, whereas Benedict XVI, I think he had still to learn quite a bit, and but he does it well, there is no doubt.
To define in just a sentence his pontificate up till now, how would you do that? Difficult question.
A very difficult question. I would say he has astonished people, especially because he shows the face of the loving God, also himself. He points always to the face of God in Jesus Christ. But he himself also tries to show this face of God.
Out of curiosity, he's not going to anywhere Benedictine, is he?
He's not going to any Benedictine monastery. I think it's he has to take care of all the religious, not just of the Benedictines. I'm very happy that he made a Salesian as Secretary of State. I think we all have to work together, all the religious. Up to Vatican II, we were more perhaps in competition, but now we see us in a complementary way. And Benedictines are monks, they are rooted in the everyday religious life. They are not specialized. They are doing a lot of things, but they are not specialized for some special purpose. But they try to live out the gospel in community, under the rule and an abbot. And this has given the whole Occident a special way of Christianity. It's living out the gospel. And therefore he points out, of course, from time to time, to the rule of Saint Benedict and the Benedictine tradition, or the importance of the Benedictines in European history.
Our thanks there go to the Abbot Primate of the Benedictine Confederation, Notker Wolf. And now moving on in the broadcast, it's time for our weekly rendezvous with our popular Latin lover. Leaving behind the area of today's Germany where the Danube flows and where in places like Regensburg, the Roman legacy is still visible. And going to another area of this nation where the Rhine flows and where the Romans' legacy is a rather more painful one. Watch a change of pace as I'm about to chat with our Latin lover, his Carmelite father, Reginald Foster.
We're going to speak about a general who wasn't very successful. His name was Varus.
Well, no, he was connected to one disaster in history. He was the legate of the Roman army on the Rhine River. This is 9 AD, Christian era. And, of course, Augustus had a whole program of going from the Rhine River east to take over Germany, which, of course, you know the Romans never did. They never got into Germany, never took it, never.
But they crossed the Rhine, though.
Yeah, fine, for about 5 miles. And every time they tried to take Germany, they would just get beaten to death. Well, anyway, Varus was one of these guys.
He was a general.
Yeah, well, he was a legate, like a lieutenant. Oh, I don't care. I don't care. I'm a general.
So let's get his name. His name was Quintilius.
Quintilius Varus.
Quintilius means fifth or one.
No, well, Quintilius is just the name. Quintus is fifth. Mm-hmm. Quintilius Varus
doesn't mean anything special.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. So he's up in Germany with this army on the Rhine. And the idea is to go east. Well, he made a deal with some of these German princes who did not want the Romans coming in. And one of these guys was Arminius.
He had a Latin name.
Well, the fact is he was a Roman citizen and was in the army, but he was always a German, and so he was working to resist the Romans. We would call him today Herman, but his name was Arminius, and he made certain deals with Varus, which he didn't keep. And so on one particular march, a spring march, if I'm not mistaken, that's why he says three eagles.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Why?
Because he had three legions.
So each legion had an eagle as a standard.
Certainly. The 10th legion, the 5th legion, they didn't get that high.
Legion, what does legion mean?
Legiones. You know, Italian people, well, it depends how you want to take it.
Legiones means?
Yeah, legio is, of course, 9,000-10,000 men together. Anyway, so he's going back home with three legions. And Arminius, Herman, kind of says, oh, there's a little trouble here on the other side of this forest. And poor Varus, he wasn't so sharp, takes the three legions into the forest to stop this problem on the other side. And of course, Arminius is waiting for him and cut the Roman legions to pieces. Could have been about 30,000 men. And that's why, so the three legions, or the three eagles, were lost in the year 9 AD at the hands of Arminius, but Varus, he committed suicide.
How do you say commit suicide?
Sibi mortem concivit.
In other words?
He brought death on himself. Because
Sibi means?
On himself.
Mortem, death.
Concivit, concisco. He turned death onto himself.
Mm-hmm. And eagles, how do you say eagles?
Well,
aquile. They lost three eagles.
Tres amiserunt aquilas. Mm-hmm. So what happened, of course, so that was the end of it. So when the news, that said your little ballad there, when the news got down to Rome, of course, Augustus just about lost his mind. And they set up on the Palatine Hill. He was running around the Palatine Hill, just about pulling his hair out. Vare, redi mihi legiones. Varus, give me back my legions.
So vare,
redde, R-E-D-D-E, redi mihi, to me, legiones.
Legiones, legions.
Yes, and so Augustus says, Varus, where are you? Give me back my legions. Of course, Varus was dead with suicide. The legions were wiped out. It was the worst disaster the Romans ever suffered.
How do you say under shock? Augustus was under shock.
Perturbator. He was being disturbed totally. Perturbator, maybe. I don't know. Oh, yeah, for a long time.
They say he forgot to shave.
Yeah, he just slipped out. It was as he was screaming around the house. Mm-hmm. Vare, give me back my legions.
Okay, well, how do you translate flipped out? You said that.
Okay. Exiit de mente. He went out of his mind. Exiit de mente. And that was the end of Augustus's German policy. And the Romans never got into Germany.
A huge thank you there to our popular Latin lover. He's Carmelite father, Reginald Foster. And he's currently working in the Vatican as the Pope's own Latinist. And that brings us up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbury.
Laudator Jesus Christus.